Welcome to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. I find the way in which politicians work out the collective problems of society always to be intriguing, if not confusing. In particular, the current manner in which the Congress of the United States is addressing national and international issues, when both houses of Congress and the presidency are controlled by the Republican Party, is quite confusing, if not frustrating. For the first time since 1953, the Democrats have not had access to the microphone in the political arena of our national government. In this edition of Radio Curious, we'll talk with Congressman Mike Thompson, who represents Mendocino County in the United States House of Representatives. I spoke with Mike Thompson from his office in Washington, D.C. on November 5, 2003. As we begin, he is expressing his frustration with the way the Republican leadership of the House of Representatives controls what matters are heard before committees of Congress. He's talking about what happened when Democratic members of the committee came to a committee discussion where health care reform bills were under consideration.
Reform bill that is going to go before both houses for a vote. As soon as they showed up, the chairman of the conference committee adjourned the hearing. So I just don't know how you can have a hearing and put forward what policy that's in the best interest of all Americans by having one small group meet in secret to conceive that policy.
You described the leadership as having a mission. How would you articulate what that mission is?
I believe that they want to pass their agenda, and they want to do it with as little compromise as possible.
Well, what is their agenda?
Well, that would be determined by what the policy area is.
Give us some examples.
Let's take Medicare reform. It's the first major reform of the Medicare program in 38 years. It seems to me that when you take on something that significant, it should be done cooperatively in a bipartisan manner, and we should do it in a way that represents all the people of this great country.
Well, that's true, but if we're looking at the leadership, and I presume there are some people, as you say, with a mission or an agenda, presumably intelligent individuals, why are they doing it this way?
Well, if you ask me for an example, and the Medicare would be the one, their agenda is to take Medicare and make it a private insurance program. They're pushing to do that. They want to move it away from a government program and make it a private sector program. That's the agenda. That's what they're trying to do. And that's, in large part, I suspect, why they are holding these closed-door meetings.
What's your feeling on the government providing health care for everyone?
Well, I think that we've got major problems in regard to health care. We've got 44 million people who are uninsured, and that number may even double if you talk to health care professionals when you factor in the folks who are underinsured or the people who are in part-time or temporary positions because they come in and out of employment. So it may be as much as 80 million people who are unemployed. This not only creates a situation where folks don't have health coverage, but it also increases the cost that those who are insured have to pay for their health care. I think we have to make some major changes in our health care, and we need to make quality, affordable health care accessible to everyone.
How do you propose to do that? Is that something like the Canadian system where it's available to everyone, or there's a pay-as-you-go?
Well, I don't know that there's a silver bullet answer for this right now.
I'm asking for the Mike Thompson proposal.
You can't have a Mike Thompson proposal anymore. You can have a Barry Vogel proposal. You have to have something that works. And I think it's a multi-pronged effort. You've got to look at the most obvious areas of fixing the system, which would be providing preventive health care for children and get as many children, get all the children covered so we can stop problems before they become acute and capture those savings rather than having to pay for lengthy hospital stays, which are more expensive for children than for other folks, then we have to look at the immediate need to take care of the long-term health care costs of the elderly. And I think only by doing it that way can you meld that into something that will provide some access to quality, affordable health care for everyone to enjoy. There's programs out there that are working. The Healthy Family Program is working very, very well to take care of those folks who, the children of parents that work but don't make enough to pay for insurance. There's going to be expansion in that program. There are various ways that we can do it right now.
Do you see that coming, considering the way you describe the mission and agenda of the Republican leadership?
Well, I don't see it coming under this leadership, no. There doesn't seem to be any interest in doing that. And as I explained, if you look at the health care, the Medicare reform that these guys are pushing, I don't think that gets us anywhere close to where we want to be and probably exacerbates the problem. You know, they want to push Medicare folks into HMO programs, and as your listeners know, that doesn't work in rural parts of the United States. There just isn't the coverage there to provide for that. And then if you move it completely into the private sector, there's no experience that we've had that suggests that that's going to work.
Let's talk about the war. That's where the money is going. And on Monday, November 3rd, the Senate voted to appropriate $87 billion. And what was striking to me was that there were only seven members of the Senate present that voted, and this passed. How can that be?
Well, as I understand it, they voice voted the emergency supplemental appropriation. They voice voted it. They didn't take a roll call vote.
So that means that seven people voting in favor can pass that kind of expenditure?
What it means is they voice voted the bill. There was no objections to holding a voice vote. It's not uncommon to do that. What is uncommon is that it's done on such a significant piece of legislation.
Why was it that there were some members, if you know, some members of the Senate who chose not to speak up in opposition to it?
Barry, I don't know who the seven members were, but clearly the seven that were present did not object to that, and why, I'm not sure.
What I'm talking about is the other members of the Senate probably knew or should have known that that vote was coming up.
I don't know.
Well, let's talk about that $87 billion expenditure. Do you think it's appropriate?
Do I think?
That spending $87 billion to continue the United States operation in Iraq?
Well, Barry, I think that the personnel who are serving in Iraq need to have the funding necessary to do the job that they were sent to do. As you know, I voted against the unilateral invasion of Iraq. And as you know, I voted against the emergency supplemental appropriation of $87 billion. And I did it for a couple of reasons. It seems to me that there's got to be some accountability on this expenditure. And that's something that's absent right now. Given all the money that's been spent to date, it's another $80 billion had already been spent before this $87 billion appropriation was even introduced in the House or the Senate. And we don't know where that money was spent. I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to provide accountability on the private sector contracts that have been let, the non-bid private sector contracts. I think we need to know why it is our mechanized equipment doesn't have the parts that's necessary. We need to know why we have U.S. military personnel serving in Iraq without having the Kevlar inserts in their body armor. We need to know why it is that families from across our district and every other district in this country is having to send supplies to their sons and daughters and community members who are serving in Iraq. When you have to have a bake sale to raise money to buy socks for your son and his platoon, there's a problem, and there's a definite lack of accountability, and that needs to be discussed. We've got situations where we have American contractors that are bidding to do work, and we end up subbing that work out to Iraqi individuals for a fraction of the cost. I think these are all questions that need to be asked, and that is in large part why I voted against it.
Do you think that the United States should continue to remain in Iraq, or should the troops or the vast majority of the troops be brought home?
I think probably something different. I think what has to happen is that we need to engage the rest of the world, engage our allies in the effort to stabilize and rebuild Iraq. We've created a situation over there that is worse than before we went in. We have the stability of that entire region hinged upon what happens in Iraq. I think, as someone said, we broke it, we own it, we have to fix it. There's all kinds of options that face us, and I think it's similar to what Vince Lombardi said when they introduced the forward pass. And he said there are only three things that can happen, and two of them aren't good. We have a terrible situation over there, and we need to figure out how to stabilize the situation. We need to figure out how to bring that stability to Iraq, and then how to get our troops out of there as soon as possible.
Well, I want to ask you about why we went there in the first place, and now we stand alone. But first, I want to say that on this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with First District Representative to the United States House of Representatives from California, Congressman Mike Thompson. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Before we continue our conversation with Congressman Mike Thompson, I'd like to play you a favorite song of mine. Wasn't That a Time? It's by Lee Hayes and Walter Lowenfels. It was sung by the Weavers when they had a reunion concert at Carnegie Hall on November 28th and November 29th of 1980.
Wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time, time to try? The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
Brave men who fought at Gettysburg, now lie in soldiers' graves, but there they stand, the rebel tide, and there faith was saved.
Wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time to try? The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
The informers took their Judas pay to tell their sorry tale. The gangs in Congress had their way, and free souls went to jail.
Wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time, wasn't that a time to try? The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time? How many times we've gone to kill in freedom's holy name, and children died to save the pride of rulers without shame. Wasn't that a time? Wasn't that a time to try? The soul of man, wasn't that a terrible time?
Our faith cries out, we have no fear. We dare to reach our hand to all our neighbors, far and near, to friends in every land. Isn't this a time, isn't this a time, isn't this a time to pray? Oh man, isn't this a wonderful time? Isn't this a wonderful time?
On this edition of Radio Curious, we're talking with First District Representative to the United States House of Representatives from California, Congressman Mike Thompson. You're listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Mike, it seems like there was a pretty odd set of circumstances, and it seems like there's a lot of people in the country who are saying, what's going on, and not getting answers to the questions that you're posing. There's something wrong with this picture. That's a question. Can you comment?
Well, I guess I didn't hear the question. You said it sounded like a statement to me.
Well, yeah, it was. It was. Yeah, okay, can you respond to that? There's something wrong with this picture. What's going on?
Well, I'm not certain what part of the picture you want me to respond to, Barry.
The fact that we send people to Iraq to start a war last March, and now we're spending a huge amount of money to support the American troops who are there. There's not money to support health care, our previous example in our conversation, in the United States.
Well, I think you're rolling issues together. The fact of the matter is, the $87 billion that you're suggesting could have been spent for health care isn't available for health care any more than it's available for Iraq. The truth of the matter is, the dirty little secret, these folks who are spending that money are spending money that we don't have. That's deficit spending.
It's a problem either way, and the money's being spent.
Absolutely.
So that's part of the problem that we're looking at.
Absolutely.
That I'm talking about. So how did it come to this? What's wrong with the picture that brought us to this place in America at this time?
Well, Barry, you know what's wrong with the picture. That's a very rhetorical question. There was a movement by this administration that led us into this war, and it's been called by others a war of choice. I, as you know, from the beginning, I expressed concern, have never believed that we were in any immediate danger from Iraq, voted against the war resolution to go to Iraq for that purpose, sat through all the top secret briefings where this administration tried to make a case as to why it was necessary for us to go there, and was never convinced that there was a reason to do a preemptive unilateral strike of a sovereign country, and voted accordingly. The administration, as you know, stated that we were in immediate danger, that Saddam Hussein had massive weapons of mass destruction, that he was very, very close to building, if he hadn't already built, a nuclear weapon, and made their case that we needed to go in there and do it unilaterally. And that was the vote of Congress. And that's what brought us there. And as you know, subsequent to that, we have not found any indication that there were anything in that country that put us at any immediate danger. You know that we the U.S. military and the British military moved so quickly that we crossed the proverbial red line into Baghdad faster than anyone had anticipated. So if there were any weapons of mass destruction, there's no way they could have been hidden. We were there too quickly for that to happen. And it's clear that was not the case. And either someone misled us terribly, or the intelligence under which we were using to operate was so badly flawed that they missed this thing by 180 degrees.
That goes back to my question of there's something wrong with this picture. Either we're being misled or our intelligence is badly flawed. Shouldn't our government run a more precise operation, a more transparent and upfront operation?
I believe they should.
So how do we change that?
I believe we change the leadership in the White House in November.
And you're supporting Wesley Clark. Tell us why.
I am. I'm supporting Wesley Clark. I've known him. I first met him when he was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. I was over in Kosovo. I'd gone over with a group of my colleagues to look at the situation there. He was, as you know, the commander, and met him on that trip. Had a number of conversations with him. I've talked to him about military issues and foreign policy issues. I think he has a terrific command of foreign policies, foreign affairs. Bright guy, you know, graduated number one in his class at West Point. Was a Rhodes Scholar. Went back to be a professor at West Point. As I already mentioned, was a Supreme Allied Commander, a four-star general. I think he has good democratic values, and I think he's someone who can, in fact, win the November election.
Well, there's a lot of people in this district who would, Democrats in this district, who would support Howard Dean or Dennis Kucinich. And how would, in addition to what you have explained about Wesley Clark's credentials, how would you distinguish him from Dean or Kucinich?
Well, I think that General Clark has a better chance of winning, of beating the current president, if he were the standard bearer for the Democratic Party. And I think he appeals to a wider range of voters across this country. I think he appeals to moderate, both moderate Democrats as well as moderate Republicans. And I think that's what's going to be needed if we want to win.
Notwithstanding the fact that he didn't declare his party affiliation until shortly before he announced his candidacy?
I don't think anybody is overly concerned about that.
The goal is
I just don't think voters across this country really care when somebody registered to with one of the other parties. I think they're more concerned with someone who can lead this country in a direction which makes America great and in a direction in which the American people want us to travel.
On a regional level, do you think that Arnold Schwarzenegger answers that desire?
Well, I think that's probably a prime example. You saw what happened in California. There were a lot of crossover votes that voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger. A lot of Democrats voted for him.
He said, "I will lead," but he didn't say where he will lead us. He said he will represent the people, but he doesn't say what his policies are, which is an interesting response that he was elected with those phrases.
I don't think I would have chosen the word interesting to describe that. I think it was sad commentary that we can elect anybody to any office without knowing what that person believes in, or especially in a situation such as California, where voters would choose someone to step in and address problems as serious as we have, without having any idea how that would happen. Having said that, the election has taken place. We have a governor-elect. We'll have a new governor. I, for one, wish him the best of luck. I want very much for him to succeed, not for his sake or my sake, but for our sake, for the sake of California. We've got some major, major issues that we have to deal with, and I'll certainly help do that any way that I can.
Do you plan on attending his inauguration on November 17th? I noticed
No.
I saw that the members of Congress had been invited.
Quite honestly, I didn't know the date until you just told me. So,
Mike, you mentioned a few minutes ago the deficit spending with regard to the $87 billion, or using that for health care. With the major deficit that we have now, whereas 6 years ago there was a surplus on the budget, what's going on? What's going on with the economy?
Well, unfortunately, we're getting deeper and deeper in the hole. As you referenced, the latest is the $87 billion, but we're projected to have a $500 billion deficit. Our national debt has increased to about $6.7 trillion. We're paying about $1 billion every day on interest only on our national debt. And this is $1 billion a day that can't go to health care. It can't go to Social Security. It can't go to Iraq. It can't go to pay off the debt. It can't go to tax cuts.
Who gets that $1 billion?
Anybody who holds paper on our national debt. The frightening part of that is that about 38% of it, 36-38% of it, is held by foreign individuals. One of the concerns is that a big amount of that is held by the Asian investors, and we run the risk of countries such as China being able to influence our economic situation, our interest rates in the out years. And that should give everyone reason to for pause.
Foreclosing on government property.
Well, foreclosing on manipulating their monetary policy to affect ours. You bet.
Well, Mike Thompson, Congressman from the 1st Congressional District in California, I want to thank you for being with us on Radio Curious. And before we close, can you tell us about an interesting book that you've read lately?
I've just read a book on the last flight back from California that a friend gave me, and he gave it to me for a couple of reasons. One, it has a connection with a member of my family, with my oldest son, I think you know, is a firefighter, and it also so it has a connection with him, and it also had a it was timely given the terrific horrific forest fires in Southern California. It's a book called Fire. By the same fellow that wrote The Perfect Storm, and it's a collection of stories about his firefighting experience and the firefighting experiences of others, and it really makes you understand how dangerous a profession that is and how fortunate we are to have the brave men and women that we have as first responders. And in this case, it's firefighters, but in every case, it's firefighters, it's police officers, it's nurses, it's our military folks. There are a whole bunch of very brave men and women in our district, our state, and our country who go to work every day to make our lives safer.
Mike Thompson, thanks for being with us on Radio Curious.
Barry, anytime.
Congressman Mike Thompson represents the 1st Congressional District of California, the area from Napa County along the coast to Oregon, in the United States House of Representatives. The book he recommends is Fire by Sebastian Younger. The musical piece we heard in the middle of the program is called Wasn't That a Time, recorded by the Weavers, Pete Seeger, Lee Hayes, Ronnie Gilbert, and Fred Hellerman, when they had a reunion concert of the Weavers in Carnegie Hall in New York City on November 28th and 29th of 1980. Copies of this and other editions of Radio Curious are available for $10 each. At Radio Curious, we appreciate your cards, letters, suggestions, and ideas for future programs. And here's our address. Radio Curious, Post Office Box 7, Ukiah, California, 95482. The phone is 707-462-6541. And the email is curious@pacific.net. You've been listening to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Stay curious, be creative, and join us again for another edition of Radio Curious.